You know what that means.
What does that mean, Yesenia?
You are tuned into Super Sun Everything, Everything Under the Sun, weekly radio show, Thursdays at 4.
That's right. It's time for another Everything Under the Super Sun. And our guest today is on her way. We're going to be talking about the podcast Your Diet Sucks with Zoe Rom. So Zoe will be here any minute now. But before she shows up, I'm just going to out you on the radio. Yesenia had a birthday.
Okay. Oh,
happy birthday, Yesenia.
Thank you. Thank
yesterday.
You. Yes.
Okay, one sec. You tell people how your birthday was, and then get Zoe in here.
My birthday was good. I turned 18, and I'm excited for this this radio show because they talk on nutrition and a little on social media, which definitely has affected many teens' life like mine that just turned 18. And so I'm excited because I had a good birthday. Thank you. Hello.
Zoe, I don't think you're really going to need those headphones. We'll just move that monitor out of the way so I can see you. How's your day been?
Good. Frosty. Although 38 degrees has never felt warmer than after what we've been having.
After the past week,
yeah.
It's like balmy
outside.
It's all outside.
Relative, exactly. Tank top weather.
Yeah. No, I was just up at Spring Gulch and it was gorgeous. Soft
yeah,
snow.
Conditions good up there.
Yeah. T-shirt conditions. Not
best
quite,
time of year.
But approximately.
Yeah, getting there for us.
And while I was skiing around, I was enjoying listening to your podcast. You pointed me toward some of your highlight episodes. One was all about eating disorders, and I learned a lot of things that I didn't know in that realm. And the other was about superfoods, which was also super fascinating, not to be redundant. But one thing, we have lots of questions for you. Yesenia has a huge list right here.
Yes.
But I just wanted to say that you as a journalist bring so much to these podcasts in terms of the amount of research and the history, and it becomes about sociology in many ways, as well as physics, well, physiology, and so many other things, nutrition. So I was curious what kind of work you do just to prepare for an episode of Your Diet Sucks.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I have one of the reasons as a journalist, I have, like, throughout the course of my career, been so fascinated with food. Is that food and the way we interact with it is the perfect marriage, like you said, of culture, of history, of politics, policy, science, physics, exercise, physiology. It really combines all of these different elements that I'm really interested in. So I feel like my research process usually starts with like a nagging question I have, like, wait, why is it this way? Like, wait, I don't actually think I know what a superfood is. Or wait, why does our healthcare system work in this way? Or why do I feel this way about eating a snack? And it starts with that little like nagging curiosity in the back of my head. And usually I start to look at, I like to go to the science first, because that usually is kind of a more specific starting point, and see what research is already out there, see what other researchers are already exploring and what questions remain and how people have been approaching it through a scientific lens. And then I like to get into the history, because I think the thing that I've loved the most about doing research for Your Diet Sucks is that things that I've thought superficially maybe are more recent phenomenons, inevitably, once I dig into the research, I'm like, oh, my God, no, athletes have been dealing with this forever. Mm-hmm. For instance, I had an episode about how the dangers of social media and influencer culture. And I was like, well, obviously, this is a completely recent phenomenon. And lo and behold, when I dug into the research, there was this incredible history going back to the gladiators, and gladiators using their athletic pursuits to sell wine and olive oil. And I was like, you know, we have been humans this whole time. There has always been a culture of people with athletic prowess and with platforms trying to sell one thing or another. And that I found not just fascinating, but it's so reassuring to know that a lot of the problems I'm looking into aren't new. I think the solutions can be novel, but humans and food have had a fraught history since the beginning. And I think that is like where my curiosity and comfort sort of meet at the end of the research.
Mm-hmm. Wow, cool. I love the way you describe that, because when you really zoom out, it's about food.
Yeah.
And food touches our lives in like more ways than anything else.
Yeah. At minimum, I mean, for me, at least three times a day, usually more.
Very quick. When is like your episodes like? Once in a while.
Yeah, we release episodes every 2 weeks. As you mentioned, it takes a good bit of research to dig into things. And a lot of times I'll be like trying to follow up with people who were doing research to see like, hey, am I understanding your paper correctly? Would it be accurate for me to represent your research in this way? Mm-hmm. And doing some fact checks and just making sure I have all my ducks in a row and sort of compiling an outline for each episode, which my co-host Kylie probably hates me because they keep getting longer and longer. And I feel like usually I start researching with what feels like a simple question, like, what is biohacking? And like, is it supported by science? And I'm like, oh, that seems pretty straightforward. And then after a day and a half later, I'll have like 21 pages of notes. And I'm like, man, that's going to be really tough to whittle down to a 1 hour podcast.
Uh-huh. Well, in addition, you're so humorous, and the banter between you and Kylie is so much fun. You can tell that you have a great friendship outside of doing this show. And so you keep it entertaining. And what I really liked in the superfood episode, I learned, first of all, that the term comes from the United Fruit Company, and the first quote-unquote superfood was a banana.
Yeah.
And that in that, you play a little piece of, I guess it was from your experience of growing up and a religious case for why the banana proves that there is a God.
Mm-hmm. Which, a bold take for the banana.
And I wish I had that clip right now because it was just priceless. And I love that you dropped it in the podcast too, and that there are just elements that pop in and surprise you too.
Yeah. I love this podcast because I feel like I get to bring in a lot of different elements of my experience and background, both as a journalist, as an endurance athlete, as a comedian, and as an improviser as well, because I have found that if you just yell scientific studies at people, it does not very engaging content make. Mm-hmm. And so being able to bring in an element of humor, especially for topics that might feel really heavy or scary, like talking about eating disorders or disordered eating, or you know, different aspects of food that maybe aren't as fun and funny as the somewhat delightful history of the banana as a superfood, and being able to bring in that element of levity, I think really helps people feel safer when we're approaching these kind of tough topics. And I think that, you know, I'm really interested in translating my relationship with Kylie for the audience so that they feel like they're a part of our friendship as well. Because again, mm-hmm. I think that some of the issues that our culture has around food have a way of making people feel really isolated and feel really alone. And it sort of pushes people into their cultural corners. And we just wanted to build a space that felt fun and approachable and accessible and gave people the opportunity to question these narratives and use the lens of humor, use the lens of history, use the lens of science, whatever lens feels most authentic to them, to bring that to these conversations.
Mm-hmm. To add on your like interest in this topic, why did you decide to start this podcast?
Yeah, actually, I got my start in podcasting as a high schooler as well, working at my local public radio station in Arkansas, hosting a food podcast. Mm-hmm. I grew up on an orchard back in Arkansas and had always been really interested in food. I always felt a really close connection with food. Mm-hmm. And I sort of also had a somewhat challenging journey around food as a younger woman. And doing research and trying to understand like where a lot of these challenging cultural narratives came from helped me understand my own challenges. And so it was sort of a marriage of professional interest and personal struggle that I think really sort of alchemized something even bigger that allows me to bring both my, again, my personal experience and sort of my professional interest to something that, mm-hmm. again, is based in evidence, but also has sort of that valence of lived experience around it as well, that I think makes it all the richer. But it was mostly born out of like my own sort of struggles around food and the fact that when I moved to Carbondale, I just so happened to become best friends with a registered dietitian nutritionist. And I was like, this is great. Now I have someone to talk to about food all the time. Yeah. And then eventually we just started doing it into a microphone.
Before Yesenia jumps in with her next question, I just wanted to say I appreciate how personal it becomes, too, that you bring your own lives and experiences into the podcast as well.
And it's interesting because, like, as a journalist, that's usually not my responsibility. I usually really intentionally try to create that distance between myself and the subject. But what I really wanted to do with this podcast was collapse that space so that people could also feel more welcome in terms of bringing their own challenges, bringing their own history around food and movement and fitness to the table. And it also just felt like the only authentic way to go about it, because my experience around food colors how I approach the research. It colors how I approach my own updated thinking around these things. And so it just, for me, it feels like a breath of fresh air to be like, okay, cards on the table. Here's how I feel. And then also getting into the research and sort of being able to hold that tension between, like, here's what I feel, here's what the science says, and then finding that sort of juicy middle ground between what is true and what feels true to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, my next question was going to be, how do you think social media has, like, been hurting, like, teens, how you said, like, you first started your passion at a young age for food and, like, having difficulties with food? I also know, like, in the article you say, they say that social media has started to have a rising impact.
Yeah, this is something that I've been really, really interested in because I myself am not quite ready to drop social media quite yet. And again, this comes from, like, not, you know, wanting to just be really curious about my relationship with these things and wanting to be really curious about how my interactions with social media color my relationship to exercise, fitness, and food. And this has honestly been one of the most convicting topics to research once you dive into the available evidence, because it's, spoiler alert, it's not great, particularly for younger women. And I think that that's the thing that I, like, I have such a tender heart for young women at that age, because it's such a tender time and there's so many confusing and mixed messages about your worth and conflating your worth as a human with your physical body. And so many people stand to make so much money off of that insecurity, off of capitalizing on our discomfort with ourselves and sort of continuing to push that discomfort with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think some of the things that really stand out to me in the social media, in terms of the research we did on social media, was that nutrition misinformation had 6 times more engagement than nutrition information on social media. So the majority, in one study that we looked at from Australia, out of XYZ number of posts they randomly selected for their study using an algorithm to randomly select things, the vast, vast majority were not accurate out of, like, all the nutrition information from influencers, dietitians, nutritionists. The majority of what's out there isn't true. It's not fact-checked. They, unlike me, are not doing 21 pages of research before they hop onto Instagram and post. And I think that we should all be so, so careful when we approach these spaces, because the algorithm doesn't incentivize fact-checking. The algorithm doesn't incentivize approaching things with nuance and complexity. It always incentivizes extremes. It always incentivizes things that are going to provoke the most emotional reaction, which science, I mean, love science, but it rarely does that. Mm-hmm. It usually leaves me with a lot more questions and, like, a feeling of, huh, more than anything that's going to make me want to, you know, like and subscribe for more. And so I think that training, first and foremost myself and also all of us, to approach these things with a level of skepticism and an eye towards, like, how does this make me feel? And also an understanding that we can opt out. And there is sort of a undercurrent of an entire economy that thrives off of this. And just knowing that there is power in being aware of that and knowing that you can opt out at any time.
Hmm. That makes me think of the biohacking episode, which I haven't listened to yet. But just that idea that there's a quick fix, that you can just do this thing and it's good. You're going to see huge results.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest threads that we trace throughout all of our episodes is this very human impulse that we're always like just one quick fix away from like our most optimized, idealized selves. Like if we can only cut this thing out of our diets, or if we just had the willpower to get up earlier and run. And in fact, everything is almost always so much more complicated. Like it's so tempting to think that if we just got up early and did that cold plunge or did the bullet journal or, you know, like cut out sugar from our diets, that we would be totally different people and we'd be totally optimized and everything would fall into a line. But unfortunately, the science does not suggest that that's true. And also, we're humans. And a lot of what makes our lives beautiful and amazing and worth living is pretty unoptimizable, in my opinion. Like, the best meals I've had in my life are probably not optimal from a nutrition standpoint, but they're optimal for other reasons. And so I think we always want to push people to understand food and fueling as being more than just like, well, how can I use this as like one more route towards like this like hyper capitalistic pursuit of self-improvement? And how can I start to see food, nutrition, and fueling as a way of supporting my physical health, my mental health, my emotional health, and my social health? And how can I find connection over optimization here? Mm-hmm. And I think biohacking is such a fascinating thing, because when we dug into it, another thread that we've always been so interested in pulling on is how these things play out differently across genders. And we had done a lot of research, particularly on how social media tends to impact women more as compared to men. Biohacking tends to be a space where men are more adversely impacted than women. And there's a lot of emerging research that shows that increasingly men are developing disordered eating patterns and eating disorders that have been branded biohacking, which sort of gives it this valence of cultural acceptability, gives it sort of a veneer of scienciness. But at the end of the day, is it actually making you healthier? And does your version of health include social, mental, and emotional health as well?
For people just tuning in, this is Everything Under the Sun, and we're speaking with Zoe Rum, who is a journalist, a podcaster, an ultra runner, a comedian, part of the Consensual Improv troupe as well. And I really want to touch on that, because there's another word that I learned here, orthorexia, which is an obsession with healthy eating. And when you talk about the other things that we gain from a meal, and there's that social aspect, the emotional aspect, and I could see where if somebody is so obsessed with healthy eating that they're perhaps removing themselves from situations, family situations, or being with friends and things that will have a detriment on their emotional well-being, because it's some physical standard that they're trying to uphold.
Yeah, this is a big one, especially this time of year. I know a lot of people are doing Whole30, 75 hard, or clean eating. And I would just always push people to, again, approach with a lot more curiosity. And orthorexia, I think, is such a fascinating phenomenon. And it's not a clinically recognized definition. It's like a subclinical description of an obsession with the perceived cleanliness and healthfulness of food to the detriment of your overall health. And I think this is one that that feels particularly sticky for our culture right now, because we keep being handed a definition of health that's like all about like counting calories and getting steps in. And it has become so myopic as to exclude time with friends, time with your family, time with your pets, time connecting out in the real world. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that breaks my heart is when I see people who are pursuing what may on the surface seem like healthy diets to the detriment of their actual health, when it comes to like, well, I would say if you literally can't go out and eat at a restaurant with friends, like that doesn't seem that healthy to me. Like, sure, like, you know, do your thing. But I think that we have to, I would continue to challenge people to expand their definition of health, to be more inclusive and to be more flexible in a good way, because the evidence also doesn't show that cutting out huge swaths of food is that beneficial for us either. You know, there's overwhelming evidence that shows that the best diet for us is pretty complicated and nuanced, but doesn't include cutting huge groups of food out. And so I've always been fascinated with the trend of clean eating and orthorexia, because I think it just captures this sort of like uniquely American obsession with self-improvement and optimization through these really, really narrow lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Another question I'd be was like, what is your goal with your podcast, with this podcast?
My goal would just be to open up a place for people to question all of the narratives that we've been handed around food and fueling. I feel like anyone who's lived in a human body has probably been handed a set of stories around how we should look and how we should be and how we should hunger for things that I want to push people to interrogate and investigate. And more than anything, I feel like our podcast episodes very rarely arrive at a solution, which, sorry to disappoint you after an hour of listening, we don't have a lot of answers, but we do have a lot more questions. So for me, it's so much more about how do we invite people into the process of questioning and then give them a jumping off point to sort of take the frameworks we explore in our podcast into their own lives. And maybe they disagree with us. Maybe they do want to pursue a specific diet, and that's awesome. And so far as that is like an empowered and independent decision they're making, and it's not coming from a place of like, well, culture tells me I have to look like this, or culture tells me I'm only worthy if I look like this, or culture tells me that this is what health is and I'm only worthy as a person if I'm this narrow definition of healthy.
Mm-hmm. One thing that jumped out in Kate Phillips' article to me was there's this villainizing of sugar.
Yes, this is a big one for me because I love sugar.
So tell us more. Defend sugar.
Yeah. Well, so I am an elite endurance athlete, and I feel like sometimes it blows my friend's mind when they're like, you must eat so healthy. And I'm like, yeah, you know, like candy, cake, ice cream, you know, carbohydrates, simple carbohydrates. Like mm-hmm. when I, my hobby is running ultras. I like to run a very long way. And to do so, we need quickly available, simple carbohydrates, which normal people would call sugar. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so funny that this this nutrient that is like totally demonized by our culture is like my lifeblood. Like you simply cannot run to your potential if you do not have abundant glycogen from sugar in your system. And so I think that that is just like the perfect sort of like encapsulation of how these narratives around food get sort of distorted and twisted for sometimes nefarious ends. And I think, you know, again, I'm not advocating for everyone like going out and like, I don't know, eating a bowl of sugar for dinner, unless, I mean, you know, if that's your thing, fine. Good luck with that. But there's also just like this viewing of this moralization around things that like this is good or this is evil. This is good. This is bad. This is okay. This is off limits. And I feel like sugar is one of the ones that most often falls into that territory of being labeled as bad and evil and off limits, even though it's something that we find abundantly in nature and is an important part of our like health ecosystem when eaten in moderation and in a way that makes sense for our movement practice. And so mm-hmm. a big one for us, like particularly with athletes, we see so many endurance athletes who want to cut sugar out of their diets, and you simply cannot.
Should.
Like you should not do that. I think, you know, that's like this, that would be one of the silliest things you could do as someone who needs to have quickly available glycogen in their system. So it's funny because people will have this like emotional story around the word sugar, and then they won't around something like maltodextrin or glucose, or they'll be like, well, I don't want to have sugar, I just want to have fructose. And it's like, girl, do you know what fructose is? That is just sugar. That is just a fancy, that is just an F word for sugar.
Great, thank you. Yesenia, did you have another question?
Not really.
Okay, I've got a few.
I can't. Yeah, you go.
Well, so you've already hit on a number of really great topics, and I think we do say it in here, maybe it's like 15 episodes or 16
mm-hmm.
now?
Yep, our 16th episode comes out next Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. So how many more topics do you have, and what does that process look like for coming up with new topics?
I have a giant Excel sheet that I call the idea dumpster that I have. Like, I have it, like, saved on my phone so that just whenever I'm out in the world, like, I often have my ideas when I'm on runs or when I'm having conversations with friends or when I have an emotional reaction to something that I experience around food just when I'm out in the world living life. And I think that, again, so many of these stories just, like, start with, like, a, huh, like, is sugar addiction a thing? I don't actually know. Or, like, huh, like, is orthorexia actually a diagnosable thing? How do we feel about that? Or, like, huh, why is every guy I know into cold plunging right now? And then it just starts as, like, a little note on my phone, and then I'll go through it with my co-host and producer, Kylie. And then usually, because she has clinical experience working with athletes and everyday people one-on-one to help improve their diets through nutrition coaching, she'll be like, oh, yeah, I see this all the time. And that's how I know, like, okay, we're on to something, because it's sort of like an impulse I've had. And if we're seeing other people experience challenge around it or curiosity about it, I know it's going to be really fun and juicy to dig into.
Cool. And do you see bringing in guests as well in the future?
Yeah, we've actually been curious to bring in some guests, particularly because I think there are sometimes topics that, you know, just two gals who have the limited experience that two humans can have, there are some stories that might be better and more impactfully told by other folks. Or I've also been curious about talking with other nutrition researchers in the, like, people who do the science, because I think the thing that always kind of bowls me over is how hard it is to do nutrition research and how nuanced it is. Because I think that so often what gets lost in a lot of in science communication translation, particularly in popular or mass media, is just, like, how complicated this is and how infrequent it is for a study to genuinely arrive at an answer. Most often studies arrive at a very limited conclusion, and they arrive at a lot more questions. And so I'm always interested, again, in not telling people how to eat, not recommending a diet to people, but giving people frameworks to ask better questions for themselves and to become better scientists of their own experience and to better, like, unpack the stories that they're handed on their own. And so I think that walking people through the scientific process and helping them understand all the complexity that lies therein is something that I'm extremely excited about.
Great. Well, we only have about 2 minutes left. So, I mean, my personal favorite question as a journalist, and maybe it's yours too, Yesenia. Maybe it's yours, Zoe.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
I always like to ask people, what do you wish they had asked? Don't ask me that. I'm just telling you. That's just my journalism tip of the day. That one's for free.
It's a good frame.
I think that I view this podcast as being something for anyone who eats food, which I know is a pretty big audience. But again, so many of us, like, you don't have to be an elite athlete like me to be interested about this stuff. You don't have to be going to the gym every day to be curious about taking better care of yourself. You don't have to be, you know, pumping iron or doing cold plunges or on, like, a 30 pill supplement routine stack or whatever the guys are doing these days. All of us can get curious about this stuff. All of us can start to question the stories we've been handed, and all of us can start to become better researchers of our own experience.
Thank you so much, Zoe Rom.
Thank you, guys.
Your Diet Sucks, available on podcast streaming services, and more good stuff to come. Thank you, Senia, for co-hosting, and listeners can stay tuned for the regional roundup coming up next.